On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. It is the ultimate rap here on 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport, where we wrap up everything that's happened in the world of sport in the last 24 hours or so. So if you've just woken up, don't worry, you'll be totally up to date by 10 o'clock. Thank you, Brett Phillips, for sitting into the chair last week and jumping into the co-host chair this week. After a couple of weeks over in the Big Apple and all that sort of stuff, yeah, George Anigan, welcome States. Back.
Good morning, mate. How are you? And for those of you contemplating getting out of bed, don't. Simply put, the forecast, I think top is 10, did you say? 10 degrees?
No, 12.
12.
9 currently. And
you're just trying to entice people to get out of bed.
No. I want them to lie there and enjoy the next hour.
Well, I reckon you've got an hour of interesting info. More importantly, a couple of reflections on a couple of very special people, one of them being a guy called Drew Morford.
Yeah, exactly.
What a shock for
it
us.
It certainly was. And as we bring Brett Anderson from SEN Inside Football into the conversation, BA, it was just absolutely, I was totally shocked yesterday when I looked at my phone and a little pop-up had come up from the Herald Sun saying sports broadcaster Drew Morford dies at the age of 69. I've gone, what? It was just one of those things. How are you, buddy?
Yeah,
morning, Brett.
It's a tough morning to wake up as a Melbourne supporter today, Shebex. I saw the footy yesterday. But to get that news, I was down at a TAC Cup game actually yesterday morning, and the boys from work actually gave us a call just to let us know. And I was standing next to David Parkinson actually at the time and told Anthony about it. And obviously David spent a fair bit of time throughout his life and his career with Drew Morford. Terrible shock and very sad that... sounds like he was sitting at home watching the footy and that was it. But, terribly sad. And, look, obviously he's been fantastic for this sport, for commentary and everything he brings to it. I guess growing up through the 80s and 90s, him on TV, either calling or hosting footy shows was sort of something that I grew up with. So, terribly sad. And got to have a little bit of time with him in the last couple of years in the media and spend a bit of time with him. But, thought to the family.
What a good guy. He was... someone who we knew and got to love and enjoy and savour over the last 20, 30 years. New South Wales boy to boot.
He was.
And he learnt the football and he brought it with a great deal of pleasure to so many different people. And I think there was one moment I loved very, very much. And that was the time when he called at the, I think it was at the Olympics in London. Mm-hmm. He called Anna Mears winning a gold medal.
Let's relive that for 1 second. Have a listen to this, folks.
Pendleton leads. Mears has her in her sights. They get the bell. It's all on the line over the last 250 metres. Pendleton looking over her right shoulder. Mears stares straight ahead and goes straight up to Pendleton and goes past her. Vicky's gone. Anna's going round the final bend. Mears comes to the line. Gold medal, Anna Mears. Magnificent. And she threw off the visor that fell off yesterday in celebration. And Pendleton does congratulate Anna Mears. There's bitter rivalry between them. But it was good sportsmanship by Pendleton, who might have thought she'd win 3 gold medals here. She wins just one. She's applauding the Australian and she's waving to the crowd on her final lap. And Anna is punching the air. Gold medal to Anna Mears.
Beautiful 1 hour, the replay that we had just before we started on
with
the group. Peter Donegan and Drew from their chat. And also Brian Martin did a fantastic chat with Drew as well. And hopefully we can get that on SEN in the little bit too as well with his love of horse racing. But
if you love sport.
Yeah, exactly.
You had to fall in love with Drew Morford. He was fantastic.
And what Drew did say though, he proved it in that clip, was he said one of the things that he learned the most about commentary was that there is no dead air, but just to leave that gap to let the emotion run through. And he did it perfectly when Anna Mears crossed the line. He just paused for that second and a half and let the crowd tell the story, and it really brought you into it. And Peter Donegan said one of the best compliments he could play Drew was the fact that Drew lived the moment, and that really came out in his commentary. And I think that was true there. And with the commentary he did for 6PR in the last few years, he hadn't lost his touch, had he, Brett?
No, he hadn't. I was only saying yesterday, I can still see him walking around the concourse at the MCG before game day when he'd be calling games there or going to watch the footy. And it was funny. We probably obviously got to the footy at the same time most weeks, because I reckon most weeks that I walked in, I saw Drew at some stage out in the concourse. So He was a ripper, and he's going to be sorely missed, no doubt. But he's opened the door up, I guess, for many a younger sports broadcaster, and he's one of those trailblazers and people who have set the way for those coming through now, and they should all be very appreciative. So, look, he's going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, he was taking in the atmosphere before the game, Brett, and that allowed him to then convey that
put himself
on air
in the game,
throughout the game. Yeah, he immersed himself, and the important thing, I think, is he engaged with all of us, and we engaged with him, which was just the best.
Yeah, Vale,
can't ask for any more.
Vale Drew Morfitt will be very sadly missed, no doubt about it. Mate, let's get on to the footy, and as you mentioned, a tough morning for Demons supporters to wake up, because you could have actually blown yourself a spot in the finals. They had so many chances in that final quarter with that bit of a comeback.
Yeah, but they got ambushed early.
Well, they did, but as I said, they had a chance to get back into it, and they just... Their disposal yesterday was atrocious. Worst I've seen from them this year.
Yeah, they got...
touch of nerves?
They got smashed off the park in the first quarter. They refused to tackle. Collingwood continued to get out the back on them through transition from defence. Their defensive run was pretty poor, and Collingwood made the most of their opportunities. Jamie Elliott was white hot in the first half. They continued to find space inside 450, and aside from a few misses, they probably played their best game of the year, I think, yesterday. Collingwood for long periods. The second half, yes, Melbourne got back into the game when I guess they had nothing to lose in the end. They just had to make a run at it. And when the game opened up and freed up, well, they looked very dangerous. And at one stage, it got back to just over a goal, I think 8 points. And even then, you still thought, you know, all it takes is one goal going the other way. And we saw the Will Hoskin Elliott go to the goal square and drop the mark. Jeff Garlett probably gave up on it, thinking he was going to mark it. And then he drops it, falls to ground, he's able to pick it up and kick the goal. And from then on, it was going to be a pretty tough task. It would have been nice from a Melbourne point of view to get their goal, or the fact that they didn't concede late was a positive, because the percentage is going to be really important in terms of what happens today. But Bernie Vince's miss in the last sort of 20 seconds, that might prove costly in the end, because if he kicks a goal there, I think West Coast need to win by 27 or 28. Just those fine little margins are going to be really important when it comes to this afternoon. But Collingwood very good, Melbourne pretty disappointing. I saw you in the box, Shebexter. I sat in the SEN commentary box by myself yesterday. We weren't calling the game, and I've never been more nervous going to a game of footy, and in the end, I think it sort of played out that way. I did replace my cheese platter, George, in the box yesterday with an airplane sick bag, and I reckon I would have had to use it at 5 times. Way that first quarter started, I had Matty Lloyd in the box next to us, and he could see how nervous I was. I was having a chat to him pre-game, and every time Colin kicked the goal, he looked over just looking at me in bewilderment, as I think I was trying to ram my head onto the desk.
I could seriously vouch for what you're saying, because I saw you, you're right, and you just looked totally perplexed. You didn't know what to do.
It wasn't much fun in the commentary box yesterday. And if anyone did hear any cursive words coming out of the SEN box yesterday,
your apologies. tell me, Jamie Elliott's early goals, they were like daggers in the Demons' back, weren't they?
No, they were. And it sort of forced a bit of a rejig back, because Cale Kirby came in on debut and Neville Jetta went to him, but then Jetta had to go to Elliott at stages because he was so hot, and Tom McDonald got caught on him at times. They just had a really good setup in the end, Collingwood, and they played with some real freedom. And in the end, I think we saw elements of what I think a few of us have seen for a long time about what Collingwood can do when things get opened up, and they're able to play with some confidence. And that's the key for them, is being able to play with some confidence. And Mason Cox, I thought, played a pretty good second half with his 2 goals. He had one bad miss there, but he's a player who I think Collingwood would love to keep. I just reckon that there's a few clubs really keen on trying to lure him away, and the Pies really face an uphill battle to try and keep him at the Holden Centre.
Bucks gets a new contract after that display?
Well, I think he's probably going to get one prior to that, and everything we've heard is that he's likely to stay, so I don't think yesterday's result really has much of an impact on it, but it is nice in that way that they can go into next season with a bit of positive affirmation.
Exactly. And a final one on this game, mate, Jesse Hogan, even if the Demons do make the finals, chances are he won't be there.
Yeah, hamstring yesterday, came off in the second term, probably had to rejig their forward line after that. If they do get there, they do get the week off, so he would be an outside chance of playing, but it's all going to depend on this afternoon, West Coast and Adelaide.
Well, let's have a look at the next game, which would be Geelong and Greater Western Sydney. Was it stage fright for GWS as well, or were Geelong just that good?
Geelong were pretty good last night, boys. GWS disappointing, especially the third quarter where they got blown off the park. The margin drifted out to 40 points really quickly. So they were fantastic, the Cats, last night. their home form, aside from that one loss to Sydney, has been outstanding this year. And I don't know why I tipped against them last night. I sort of thought that GWS were nearly their best side on the park. We're ready to make a statement, but we saw last night that maybe they're just not quite ready. They're a team full of very talented players, but when it comes to the collective and as a team, there's still a fair bit of work to do. Where Geelong played as a cohesive unit, and they play that ground very well.
Hawkins, very big last night.
Yeah, massive.
Sort of had to be, didn't he?
Yeah, he just had a presence early against Phil Davis. He just looked like things were going to happen for him last night up forward. And look, he was the one who I think really set things and set the tone for them. Usually the tone set in the middle with a midfielder, but I thought Hawkins last night was the one who really got the ball rolling with the way he started the game.
Yeah, well, an interesting situation there that puts Geelong into second on the ladder.
That percentage hit for GWS is really costly too, because it means that they can drop below the Tigers. If Richmond win today, Richmond will finish above GWS, which is remarkable.
Yeah, it certainly would be, and that has set up a fantastic first weekend of finals with Geelong v Richmond at the MCG. I think what we do know about the finals is we've got a Thursday night, a Friday night, and then two games on Saturday.
Sunday free, boys. That's the exciting part of that. So at least we've got a day off from footy, and we can recharge the batteries and then get into the second week of the finals. But yeah, no game on the Sunday.
He's spoken like a media professional. Yeah, he wants the Sunday off.
Sunday off, exactly.
Yeah. What about the audience? Yeah. They want to watch the footy on the Sunday.
Surely there's some verse how long we can.
Well, there's local footy finals will be on Sundays too, so that'll be a big fill-up for them.
One team that won't be appearing, I reckon, is Gold Coast.
I was going to say, boys, local footy finals, my mob missed out on percentage yesterday, so it was a cracking day all around.
Gold Coast, before you go on to Gold Coast, you know you've got problems when your official club Twitter says, just not good enough, I think was the tweet.
Ouch.
They were disgraceful last night. I caught a lot of that game because I saw the GWS game was obviously drifting away, and so I turned it over and thought I'd watch Port Adelaide, and yep. Oh, fantastic, Port. Yep. They did what they need to do. They did what they've done to other teams in that area of the ladder all year. They've beaten up on them. But you know what? You can only do that against teams you're playing against. And I guess the challenge for them is now to do it against a good side next week in the finals, or in 2 weeks' time, and continue that form on. But Gold Coast were disgraceful last night. And I put a tweet out last night in regards to Tuke Miller referencing the fact that he feels that the players should have a say on the next coaching appointment. Well, for me, that might be a good idea to start looking and having some pride in your own performance before worrying about having input on who's coaching the side. Because as a group last night, that was far from acceptable. They had two scoring shots from the 25-minute mark of the first quarter for the rest of the game. Two scoring shots.
That's shocking.
So I think it's the lowest number of scoring shots for a team since 1966. Six or so, around that part.
They just took time out, mate. Don't worry.
They were as abject and as listless as you could see from a side, and the white towel went up quicker than I've ever seen before, because at quarter time the score was 15-13, and they've lost by, what was it in the end, 115 points. It was insipid.
Yeah, shocking. They've got massive problems there. Gold Coast, I don't know if they're going to fix that up in one summer. Sydney, pretty strong against the Blues, who unfortunately folded at the end of the season. But as I was talking with a couple of the kids earlier on the Auskick show, impressive season for Carlton compared to where we thought they were going to be. And they've got a lot of positives to take out of this year.
Yeah, but Corns doesn't think so, mate. He reckons they've gone backwards. So what is it, Brett? Have we gone backwards? Have my mighty Blues gone backwards?
I reckon last night summed up your season, George, in terms of the way it happened. First half of the season, really positive, because I thought last night their first half was quite good.
Yep.
They're only 15 points behind, and they'd come back after looking like getting blown out of the water early. They'd really fought back into the game. And then the second half, a bit like the second half of the season, they just totally dropped away. And in the end, Buddy Franklin was able to do as he pleased in that last quarter. He ended up with 10 goals, and the defensive positions, I know Paul Roos harped on it on the coverage, talking about how poor Liam Jones and then Jacob Wittering were with the areas that they were playing on. Buddy, when the ball comes in that quick, it's very difficult. Yeah. And when you've got nothing to play for at the end of the year, and you can see the finish line in terms of being only half an hour away, I don't want to give them an excuse for sort of just dropping off a bit, because I think you need to be better than that at a professional level.
Touché.
But you can sort of understand it when you've got a bloke who, I think, when he's up and about at his best, is clearly the best player in the competition, and that includes Dangerfield, includes Martin Sablett, that's the whole lot of them. He's at his best. There's no one who gets anywhere near Lance Franklin, and last night he was at his best, and they were pretty powerful in the end, because the percentage for them was important to try and jump above Port Adelaide if they could. And then obviously we saw what Port did, but they did their part last night, Sydney, and they'd go into September. I think they might be on the first or second line of flag betting. So they still look very powerful. The challenge will be now is to win it from that bottom half of the ladder, but the Dogs showed it is possible last year, and the bye should help.
I was just going to say, what a script they've written for themselves.
Remarkable, isn't it? 0-6 to being sort of charging to nearly being in the top four. So I guess anyone who starts slowly in future years where we look at it and go, oh, they're 0-4, they can't make it. Everyone's just going to point at Sydney, but they might be a bit of a special case. Obviously, they had a few issues at the start of the year, some players missing. I think Dane Rampey is the one who they really missed at the start of the season. And since he's come back in, the fortunes have totally changed, and he's just a fantastic player in that back half.
And
Jared McVeigh as well. There's been a bit of talk about his contract in the last couple of weeks, but he's been sensational. The challenge is now to continue it on, and I've probably had this feeling for the last six or so weeks. The real tough part for them is they've had to have been up for so long. They haven't been able to make a mistake because of the way that they started the season. Can they continue that on for 20-plus weeks in a row? And they had the odd slip up, the two Hawthorn games, the two that they've dropped. But aside from that, they've been fantastic. The challenge is now to take it into September and where there is no slipping up anymore with where they've finished.
All right, mate. One-word answers again for the end of our little chat, and begins with the two teams of Essendon and Fremantle.
Essendon by 10 goals.
That's three words.
No, that's all right. I'm with him. Richmond St Kilda, the most important match of the day.
It is,
because Tigers lose, they finish sixth, they win, they finish fourth. It's just
one word. One word, one word.
Tigers, boys. Just.
Two words.
That was about five.
What'd you say?
Tigers, just.
Tigers, just.
Yeah, I'll take that. A 1 point win, I don't care. Fennigan, I'm as nervous as you were yesterday. West Coast and Adelaide.
West Coast.
At home.
By three goals.
I'm not sure the margin. Yeah, probably. That would top up the top weekend.
Yep,
No Walker for the Crows.
Talia, last game at Subi, everything to play for. West Coast for me. I just think that they've got, and Adelaide have sewn up the minor premiership now. So aside from going into the finals, not wanting to have two losses in a row, I think this is just set up for a West Coast win and me to be sitting there banging my head on the TV.
Yeah, and John from Brisbane brings up a very, very good point for the Gold Coast next year. The fact that the season just gets worse already for 2018. Four games will have to be transferred from Metricon due to the Commonwealth Games. Probably play them in Cairns.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough gig to walk into for any coach who's taking on that job. But I think they need to get a few things right off the ground, whether it's culture and leadership. Yeah. They're pretty important things, and maybe there are areas that have really sort of been slipping in the last couple of years, so they've got a big off season ahead. It's slightly concerning if you're the AFL, just seeing how that sort of pans out towards the end of this year.
So true, mate. Next week we'll have a chat and we'll do a big preview of the upcoming finals the week after. Thanks for your time as always, mate. And the sun gets up today. It's a different day.
I'm just going online to buy an Adelaide Crows membership.
Brett Anderson, SEN Inside Football, a break. And in the studio, Michael's a pony to talk some soccer.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Half past nine here on the ultimate wrap. George Danikian joining us, and the man who just started a conversation before we went on air, and I wish you had done it 5 minutes ago because I would have loved to have argued it with you. Michael Sapone, good morning to you.
Good morning, gents.
There's no argument, boys.
Well, there is an argument that Geelong cannot host Richmond at Simmons Stadium.
Because you're a Richmond supporter, you say.
No, because they just can't. You've got to get the maximum value out of finals.
Chris Scott said it beautifully last night in the post-game press conference. He said, we're not going to have that debate, but it's for others to debate. It's a good conversation to have, and we should be having it. So let's have it. Geelong earns the right to finish second. They should play a home final.
Can't argue with that.
The MCG is one of their home grounds.
And they've got a stadium to boot that they've been building and getting better.
All right, so here's the scenario. Geelong can play a home final at Simmons Stadium when they don't use the MCG as a home ground throughout the year. Okay? So if you do not have any association with the MCG throughout the year, you earn the right not to host a final there.
We all know Richmond it's Richmond's home ground, so they take an advantage. So they have extra motivation to play today. We can argue to a blue in the face. That game
blue
will be played at the MCG.
Huddersfield are looking good, aren't they? Second on the EPL ladder, Aaron Moy has scored a goal. It's just, it's all happening.
And Aaron Moy best on ground again last night.
That's 3 weeks in a row.
So he has taken the Premier League by storm. If he continues this form in January, he'll be at a bigger club because he is their go-to man in the midfield. He sits deep and then is encouraged to go forward as well. Has scored a brilliant goal last week and again was very good last night. So they were probably looking for a win at home, but to come into the international break with 7 points, it's a magnificent start for them at the start of this season.
And what does it say for the A-League too, eh?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a breeding ground, and we haven't seen enough players come through over the last few years, George, but we've got Matthew Leckie doing it in Germany at the moment in the top division there at a very good side, Hertha Berlin. Yep. And we've got Aaron Moy as well.
And young Matty Ryan.
And Matty Ryan kept a clean sheet overnight. Clean sheet. So that was long overdue for them, but great to see three big names from the Socceroos playing consistently now in some very, very good competition.
You touched on the Socceroos, a very, very big game. And we want all the players to lift and deliver a team performance because Japan will not be an easy challenge playing on their home ground.
Yeah, so it's a huge 10 Vital days for us. Huge 10 days for the Socceroos. World Cup qualification is at stake. And not only, the fact that the Socceroos want to play in the biggest tournament in the world, huge for the FFA too. They get a huge windfall if they qualify for the World Cup, $12 million just for qualifying. They're in trouble at the moment, so they'll be thinking about that financial carrot as well. But the next few days, Australia versus Japan is one of the greatest rivalries we've got in this code, and they go back a long, long way. Now that we've been in Asia, we've had many, many huge encounters against them over the last few years. And basically, Australia needs to win and draw that one of their next two games. So take 4 points Thailand here at Amy Park and Japan over in Japan on Thursday, and they will finish in the top two. That's the equation. So a win in Japan would set us up for that home game against Thailand here on the 5th of September. It's not going to be easy. Japan have to get some value out of the next two games as well. They face an away trip to Saudi Arabia in their last World Cup qualifier. So they don't want to have to go to Saudi Arabia and having to win over there because it's a tough place to play.
So the ultimate result would be a draw at least against Japan.
That's what
he's saying. We walk away from that, and then we'd be fairly confident we beat Thailand.
Yeah, that would be a good scenario. But we all know Ange and how he operates. He won't be going playing for a draw. And the biggest encouraging thing I've seen from the Socceroos, George, was the Confederations Cup. That last game against Chile, they were outstanding. They took the game to Chile. We're unlucky not to win that game. And I think he's been persevering with his back three for a long time now. And early stages, it was looking terrible, and we were all saying, just forget about it. Move on to something else. This system isn't working. And finally, we saw it click against Chile, and I think he'll use that again against Japan. The big question mark is, Tommy Rogic and Aaron Moy didn't start in that game. Does he bring them back into the side? He has to bring Moy in, the way he's been playing, but I reckon maybe Rogic could be someone who comes off the bench.
You mentioned Ange. It's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Ange.
Happy birthday, Coach.
I'm not sure if they're over there at the moment. They might be heading over there today, but they're on their way, and it's a huge few days for the Socceroos.
Let's have a look at those EPL scores from overnight, and I'll get your thoughts on the games, boys. I'll just go through them quickly. Man U defeated Leicester City 2-0. Huddersfield and Southampton, a nil-all draw. Crystal Palace and Swansea. Crystal Palace losing that one 2-0. Watford and Brighton and Hove Albion.
Nil-nil.
Nil-all.
Yep.
Newcastle 3, West Ham 0. And Bournemouth 1, Manchester City 2, and Jesus scoring on the 21st.
He's a great player, Gabriel Jesus.
Jesus, Jesus.
That was the most extraordinary finish to that game. Raheem Sterling, for the second time in a week, has scored a winner in the 95th minute for Manchester City. Pep Guardiola was up and about off his touchline. He was under huge pressure. He couldn't drop points in this one, and they managed to take the 3 points in the most dramatic of circumstances. Raheem Sterling went to the away Manchester City supporters, started to celebrate with them. Didn't take his shirt off.
No.
He went to celebrate with them, and he got sent off because the fans came onto the ground, and he was booked for inciting the crowd, which was extraordinary. But
it was a poor umpiring performance. I thought so. And by the way, the reason I said Jesus, because that's the spirit of Les Murray channeling the right pronunciation guide here, guys.
Sergio Aguero in trouble with the police.
Was he
assaulting? Police are investigating
No,
after a Bournemouth
no,
steward alleged he was assaulted by Sergio Aguirre.
He's withdrawn the allegations, mate.
You
it's
sure?
a little bit of a little bit of red mist. We're giving you the latest. You know, you want the latest or you want the first glance?
No, I'll take the latest.
The latest is the guy's pulled back when they put the heat on him. He said, no, I'll withdraw my comments.
Manchester United, perfect
Looking
start
good.
To the season as well. Jose Mourinho has got them firing. It's taken him a little while, but this season they look to be the business. They're going to be tough to beat.
And Zlatan comes for Christmas present.
You reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He will be the ultimate Christmas present for Manchester United fans. And you can imagine, he's going to announce himself, Zlatan is back.
This is the most weirdest letter I've ever seen. I know we've only played three games of the season, but Man U on top, that's fair enough, you can cop that. Huddersfield, Manchester City, West Brom, Watford, Southampton, the top six.
There you go.
Yeah, still a lot of football to play.
Yeah, there certainly is, I know. But for those teams, it's great to see that they're actually competitive early on.
Yeah, very much so.
And we're going to mention FFA Cup. Some great results.
Yes, South Melbourne. I was out there on Wednesday night, one of George's teams.
One of them.
Well,
any team that wins, he follows.
No. He's been at South Melbourne for a long time, George.
Former president.
And they were very good.
They were,
too good for Sorrento. And 4-1, they won. They're through to the quarterfinals of the FFA Cup. This is huge for them.
I just don't want them getting a stage fright. Yeah, whenever they've had to do something really special, you can see a little tension building in the side. Chris Taylor has got them finally to release some of that tension, and they've delivered. Let's hope they continue in that spirit, because that'll be exciting.
Brilliant for Victorian football. Also brilliant was Heidelberg getting through. Now, I went into the
George
social Katsakis club.
George Katsakis is still smiling.
I went into the social club at extra time. My commitments with Fox had finished. Watching extra time of Heidelberg United versus Sydney United, the biggest crowd I'd heard all all night was when Sydney United scored the equaliser against Heidelberg. Everyone in there was going for Sydney United. You'd think that the two Greek clubs would be joining together. They hate each other, Shebexta.
This is classic NPL from 25 years ago. That was
Alexander,
beautiful.
Hate South Melbourne. Ooh.
So Heidelberg got through in a penalty shootout. Tuesday night coming on Fox Sports, we'll be out at Bentley. That's our feature game. Bentley Greens taking on Western Sydney. So that's a huge night for them out at Bentley as well. And we look forward to another great night of FFA Cup football.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if we have
really is building.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if we had the top four teams from Melbourne?
And notice he didn't mention Melbourne Victory.
Victory got
they got battled.
Unceremoniously dumped out of the competition by Adelaide. I didn't see the game because I was at South, but
I was away. Got back and looked for the scores, and I looked down the bottom and said 3-0 to Adelaide. I went, what?
Yep, bad result for Victory, and great for Adelaide. They've got a really young side this year, so a good start for them. And Melbourne City are in action again this week as
and
well.
And have we picked up another red player?
I'm not sure. Ooh. Tell me.
Young Karuska?
The red influence. Well, he's a good player. He should be playing in the A-League.
No, he is.
He is.
I think he's going to be playing for City.
You've heard it here first.
Exactly.
Shebexta breaks the news. Marcelo Karuska to join Melbourne City. Speaking of gun players, I can't leave here this morning without mentioning Paulo Dybala, my team Juventus
triple.
This morning. 4-2, hat-trick Dybala. Barcelona want him bad. Juventus have said, hands off, you're not touching him. 150 million euro, go away, we're keeping him at Juventus.
And Juventus were down 2-0.
They were.
And they won 4-2.
Yep.
When I'm sitting in the seat at Alpha Barbers in Spring Street in the new shop on Monday, that is going to be the topic of conversation.
Short back and sides for you, mate. Short back and sides.
Zappers, thanks for popping
gents.
In. Michael Zappone talking soccer. We'll take a break at 20 to 10. Plenty more to come.
16 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeke.
And George Tanneke in as well at 9:45. Time to look at the NRL, and Matty Russell joins us on the line. Good morning, Matty.
Good morning, Tony. Good morning, George.
Morning, mate. I knew that Storm were going to be good value yesterday when I saw Craig Bellamy having breakfast at the Avenue quietly all by himself, just reading the paper, just securing the knowledge that his team was ready to play. And the Rabbitohs discovered that they were going to run into a bulldozer, and it had power, it had precision. And it even had Slater there scoring a try when he needed to. 64-6, mate.
We've said it all before, haven't we? Oh. This is some sort of footy team. You know what? I asked the boys in the Fox Sports lab How good is this Melbourne team, according to your facts and figures, the predictor, this mythical machine you feed all the data into? And they said, well, we believe that this is the greatest side of the NRL era. So from 1998 onwards, you put all the numbers in there. And that's saying something when you consider the Brisbane Broncos had elite teams in the early 2000s. Yep. Even Melbourne, over the last decade, have had great teams. But across the field, with so much strength in every position, and then these three stars surrounded by size and strength and youth, it's great to watch. And last night, I know that South Sydney fans will say it was horrible to watch. We can see the 11 tries. We've never won in Melbourne. But as a pure rugby league purist, if you like, watching that sort of attack unfold, it was just outstanding. And to put 11 tries on South Sydney, who had found some form, wow, we've said it before, and we're going to say it again, they're going to take some beating in 27.
Have you ever seen a weekend like this, so score-wise, Matty, where you've got Parramatta 52, Brisbane 34? That's a cricket score for a rugby league game there. Canberra 46, Newcastle 28, Melbourne Storm 64. Just massive scores.
And what's strange is that a lot of those games are involving teams who should be warming up for the finals and really sort of fine-tuning and looking at their defence. Now, I know that Melbourne fine. Scoring 64, but you wouldn't expect a Brisbane to concede that sort of scoreline so close to the finals, nor Parramatta, the victorious team in that game, to give up more than 30. Even on Friday night, we saw Canberra give up some points to Newcastle. So there'll be some happy coaches with the two premiership points, but also worried defensive coaches. Their teams don't seem to be stopping the opposition like they should be.
I was impressed by the fact that we had nearly 30,000 people up at Suncorp to see what was... in many ways, a cracking attacking game, but you're absolutely right. Little defence, very little defence on show.
No, and they'll need to get that right because the finals, they're a week away, just over a week away.
Correct.
And there's still so many question marks over this top eight makeup. Who's going to make the top four and therefore earn the right to lose a game during the finals in that first week? Who's going to make the top eight? Well, today, the Canberra Raiders could have their season ended. Yes, they were big winners on Friday night against Newcastle, but if Manly beats the Warriors in New Zealand, then that will eliminate the Raiders. They won't be able to crack the top eight. And, you know, when I give the Warriors a sneaky chance in this game, the first rule in rugby league is never, ever tip the Warriors. today, with Sean Johnson returning, they're at Mount Smart and they're farewelling a number of players. Manly not travelling too well. It is a real tricky game, and Canberra will be definitely hoping the Warriors can shake their recent struggles and beat Manly to keep their season alive, because Canberra want to go to Melbourne next weekend with a chance of making the top eight.
Cheers. I thought Richmond St Kilda in the AFL was a juicy game for the final round. Penrith and St George is an amazing looking game for the final game of the season, with Penrith currently in sixth place. A win for them would put them into fifth.
Come on, Dragons.
St George, who are currently in ninth place, a win for them would put them into eighth and a final spot. Just a cracking game, this one.
It's huge. And when you consider that in round one they met and the Dragons shocked the rugby league world, the Dragons were criticised for being unable to score. They won the game 42-10, but a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. The Dragons have been very ill. St George Illawarra coach Paul McGregor said, we're not using that as an excuse. We're fit enough and healthy enough now to win this game. But make no mistake, they have really struggled over the last fortnight. And to face an in-form Penrith team, it's a huge assignment for them. They think they have the game plan to win, but if anyone has seen much of Penrith over the last 2 months, they're going to take some beating the Panthers, and it's all on the line. I think the Dragons have to win today. They've got the Bulldogs in the final round, and all of a sudden the Bulldogs have found their ability to score points as well.
Oh, gee. Oh, my Dragons, we need all the luck we can get. It's been a miserable football season for me so far. In the AFL, my Carlton side are way down in this. Oh, all right. Yeah, Richmond have had a season for the ages, and he's singing over there. He's singing over there, Matty. Can you believe it?
Well, the St George Illawarra Dragons have had some luck this week because Nene McDonald and their form forward Tyson Frizzell were in doubt, but both have been passed a bit. So you get a size on the wing, and you get the influence of Tyson Frizzell in the middle. That's a boost. Yep. It's going to be a cracking game. In 2004, George, the Dragons beat Penrith heavily early in the season, and then Penrith rebounded to knock the Dragons out of the finals at Penrith. So, you know, the Dragons won't take this lightly. They'll remember...
No, we've got long memories, mate.
...remember 04, and how things can swing. And that's what Penrith will be looking to do this afternoon, because they were embarrassed in round one. It was a real display from the Dragons. Remember, Joel Thompson scored a hat-trick at Cogger. He'll be looking for another treble this afternoon at Penrith. It's a beauty to wrap up round 25.
It certainly is. Mayweather or McGregor?
Has to be Mayweather. We're getting all sucked into this hype.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's a good actor, Connor.
When this was first announced, media men and women across the landscape interviewed every boxing and UFC person they could get, and resoundingly, they said, this is a hopeless mismatch. This is Mayweather first, Mayweather second, and Mayweather third. It will be that way, surely. Yeah. I'll be stunned if the plucky Irishman can cause an upset.
Yeah, but Matty, you know the important thing when it comes to selling something? When people believe in it and buy into it and they engage. I've actually got friends of my wife's saying, do you want to go and see the boxing on Sunday? I'm going, what?
You know what I'm tipping? I'm tipping Mayweather gets that far on top of him that McGregor kicks him to the head and finishes off there with a disqualification.
That could happen. And if he does do that, then he forfeits the majority of his 100 million plus. So I suggest he keep both feet
on the ground.
On the canvas, yeah. And hope that his head doesn't end up on the canvas. I asked my son at school, I said,
he'd know.
Have any of your mates been talking about the name Mayweather McGregor? And he said, yeah, every day.
Everyone.
It's all about everyone's talking about it. It is a global event today, isn't it?
It certainly is. Mate, we'll leave it there. Thanks, Matty, for your time.
We
do appreciate it. Talk next week.
Okay, gentlemen. Thank you.
Matt Russell, Fox Sports News. Break. Brett Phillips to wrap up the tennis for us.
In SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Coming up to 10 o'clock, I'll leave you out of this one for a sec, George, because I was able to catch up with Brett Phillips a little bit earlier on. He's on a plane going overseas. So with thanks to Northern Jeep Bundoora, Australia's number one dealer, the largest selection of Jeeps, all with 5-year warranty and lifetime roadside assistance. Visit Northern Jeep Bundoora today. Good morning, Brett Phillips.
Good morning, Shabik.
Mate, this is always an interesting time of year, the final Grand Slam of the year, the US Open.
Yeah, look, certainly the men's field is taking on a very interesting composition with the amount of withdrawals. This is sort of unprecedented for quite some time, and the latest to pull out is Andy Murray. He was in doubt, of course. He hadn't played any of the lead-up tournament since Wimbledon. He had trouble with the hip at Wimbledon. Only 48 hours before the US Open, he's withdrawn. He joins Djokovic, Wawrinka, Nishikori and Raonic. All top 10 players not playing at this year's US Open, which is certainly disappointing for the organisers. That's the way it rolls at this time of the year. Gee, the players have been on tour for 8 or 9 months, so they're carrying plenty of injuries, plenty of niggles, and it certainly opens the door for maybe, unless Federer and Nadal do meet in the final, it's certainly been their year. Interestingly, Shebex have never met at the US Open, so the organisers would love that. If not, it might be one of the young guns that has a chance to sneak through and win a maiden US Open.
And of course, BP, we've also got to look at the side of it from the tennis player as well. And is there a thought that they may be just pushing themselves too much and extending themselves with so many games in a year that come August, they're just buggered?
Yeah, well, scheduling is probably the most important thing in tennis now. And, you look at the demands, certainly just physically, the way the top elite men play, the wear and tear on the body is enormous. Now, when you're higher ranked, obviously you can pick and choose a little bit more with your scheduling and have those sort of rest and recovery blocks and training blocks. But when you're just battling away on the tour, you've got to keep playing just to earn points, earn prize money, and that's why the physical conditioning now of tennis players is absolutely enormous. But yeah, when you're the final Grand Slam of the year, sometimes we don't always get the rubber of the green of the Australian Open because some players might have had a big pre-season and pull out, but the US, the way it works, is probably more affected than the others.
Well, let's have a look at the draw, and the first one, I suppose, the most interesting one for Australia is Nick Kyrgios up against John Millman.
Yeah, the all-Aussie affair. Yeah, the way the way they've come out of the draw there is interesting. Look, Millman's hardly played tennis this year, so he's very underdone. He's had a lot of injury. Nick's rolling along nicely. I mean, Nick will look at this as an opportunity with those top players I mentioned out. So if he could somehow, for the first time in his career, put 2 weeks of sustained tennis best of five over 7 matches together, he might just be in with a sneaky chance. Who knows? Got to get past Millman. He's a great competitor, Johnny, but certainly not in the class of Nick Kyrgios. Alex Diminor, the young Aussie, he's got the wild card. He's 18. He's a gem. He's inside the top 200. He takes on Dominic Thiem. That's a tough one first up. The young man from Austria who's the sixth seed. Jordan Thompson's got a tough one too against Jack Sock, who's on home soil, the American. JP Smith qualifying, which is a great result. He takes on Tomas Fabiano, the Italian. So it's winnable for JP, who's played a lot of college tennis over in the US. Bernard Tomic is in the draw, but gee, who knows what we're going to get from Bernard Tarn. He's up against Jules Muller, who's, you know, at 33, having his best year on the tour from Luxembourg. And Tanasi Kokkinakis has got Janko Tipsarevic of Serbia, former top 10 player. It's a tough first round match. So, yeah, not going to be easy for the girls. Gavrilova, who is in a New Haven final this morning, so it'll be a great lead-in for her, takes on the American qualifier, Ali Killick. And then you've got Ash Barty up against Anna Conyers, the 21st seed. That's very winnable for Ash. And Arena Rodionova getting the wild cap's got Hoogenkamp of the Netherlands, who's been a bit of a journey woman. So on the women's side, certainly a chance to get through to the second round.
And Maria Sharapova back in Grand Slam mode.
Yeah, and she's got Simona Halep, which is not the easiest matchup. Coached by Darren Cale, of course. Simona's getting, well, she's edging closer to trying to win a Grand Slam. Unfortunately, she just gets outpowered by the bigger hitters, Pliskova and Muguruza, and, you know, who are certainly stealing the limelight at the moment. So Halep's going to find a way, but she wouldn't be thinking that meeting Sharapova is the best result in the first round either. Maria hasn't played a lot of tennis, as we know, Shebex, in her comeback. So that's winnable, though. You know, the women's tennis, anything can happen these days.
No, exactly right, BP. And is it correct that we're going to see tennis under lights for the first time at Arthur Ashe Stadium, and the possibility, one would think, wouldn't that be juicy, of a Federer and Nadal final under lights?
Yeah, I think they've played... that's a good question. I think, well, the final, I think, is scheduled for 4 p.m. from what I know.
Okay.
But that might alter, but... yeah, look, the organisers would love that, and this has been the script that's been written this year. For these two to come back and dominate the Grand Slams has been just outstanding for us that love tennis. We were hoping there was another chapter of Federer and Nadal, and, well, I tell you what, with all those big names out, it is just set for those two to go pretty deep, hopefully, and be in the final.
Yeah,
it's not an Aussie.
But with the withdrawal of Andy Murray now, Nadal and Federer take the 1 and 2 seeds. So they hopefully it's all set up for a massive final. Hey, BP, have a very safe trip overseas. We'll talk to you again next Sunday from somewhere in the world, and we'll catch up then and enjoy the US Open.
Will do. Thank you, Shebex.
Brett Phillips joining us here for ASTE Melbourne Synthetic Grass Sports Surface Specialist. Head to aste.com.au. George, that's it for this week.
It's been a chilly morning, mate, but we've warmed things up with some really good news from sport right around the world.
Thank you for your company today. Dasha also defeating Dominika Chibulkova, as Brett mentioned before. Cincinnati Open 4-6, 6-3, 6-4. News time, it's 10 o'clock. Inside Footy up next.